I had a dream last night. A vision. I saw a world full of people. Everybody was dancing and screaming loud. They were just there to listen to the music. It was deep. It was underground. Let's turn the world into a dance floor.
Are you guys ready for a state of trance? Put your hands in the air, come on!
This is a State of Trance podcast.
Yes, and welcome to another special edition of the State of Trance podcast. And this week we have none other than Colony in the studio. How are you doing, Kane?
I'm good, mate. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. So I have a couple of questions of my own, but also we asked our fans on the radio show to submit questions for you. So I have a couple of questions from their part as well. But we start with the start that we always start with. How did you become an artist? Or what sparked you to become an artist?
Well, I suppose it was my early introduction to trance music when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, it was actually going to Ibiza as a kid. And do you remember when Space, there used to be a water park next to Space?
Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense. That's where the parking lot now is.
Yeah, yeah. So there used to be a water park next to Space. And in opposite Space, there used to be like a record store. And I remember I went to Ibiza with my family as a kid. And I remember I was going into the water park and people was coming out of Space. And I was like, whoa, what's going on? This is mad.
They got out as soon as you went to the water park?
Yeah, I was going in at like 10 a.m. I could hear the music from Space and obviously people was leaving. And I didn't, you know, and then my dad said to me, yeah, let's take a walk into the town centre. And there was a vinyl store and bought some vinyl. And then I had no decks. So I bought the vinyl, got back to England and I was like, well, I've got all this vinyl, but I've got nothing to play it on. So I basically drove my mum mad to get me some turntables.
How old were you in this store?
I was probably about maybe nine.
Nine?
Nine or ten, maybe. So yeah, so she bought me some belt drive turntables.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, as you know, trying to mix on them, if you could, you know, it's just hard work.
Yeah, they're not constant whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah. So that was kind of, I suppose that was initially where my passion and love for electronic music sort of came from, that trip to Ibiza.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just went from there, really. So then I started exploring different genres and different artists. And it was listening to the likes of Chicane, obviously Armin, you know, Paul van Dyk, Tiesto, you know, the original guys from the trance.
The OGs.
The OGs, yeah. The legends, you know. It was listening to their music that kind of, it just went from there, really. That's kind of, yeah, it's kind of where it started.
So from 9 year old getting to Space or the water park next to Space, you heard music and your dad took you to a record shop. And you bought your first vinyl when you were 9 years old.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Which vinyl was it? Do you still remember?
God, you know what? I don't actually remember, to be fair. It was some trance vinyl. It was definitely trance stuff. I remember I was just going around the record store, just picking stuff up, putting it on the turntable, just listening to it, and then just, you know, just gathering a lot of these vinyl. My dad was like, yeah, we'll pay for them. And obviously got to the counter and I had all these vinyl. And he was like, yeah, he just bought them for me. And then went back to England. But as I say, you know, I had the vinyl, but I had nothing to play them on.
So and then when you were 9 year old, you became a DJ. Then that's basically what it is. And how did you proceed after that? Like when you were 10, 11, 12 years old?
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of evolved from there, really. As I say, I had my first belt drive turntables, and then I was probably about 13 or 14, and then I got a set of CD decks,
mm-hmm.
like the early, you know, like a cheap set,
like top loaders, or
I don't actually remember what they were, but they was. It was a cheap set of CD decks. And then it just kind of went from there, really. And then I sort of deviated through different genres. I mean, at one point, I used to listen to a lot of drum and bass as a kid. Liquid drum and bass, trance music. Obviously, I've always loved house music as well. House has been, you know, house music, techno. I like all music, really. And it just kind of went from there.
Yeah.
Just kind of.
And then you started DJing. At a certain point, you were like, okay, I need to start making music as well. How did that go? What made you start making music?
I think nowadays, you know, gone are the days of just being a DJ and just making it. You know, you need to make music if you want to DJ. And they kind of both coincide with one another. So, I mean, it was probably early 20s. I was probably maybe 21, 22. I started, maybe 18 or 19. Maybe 18, yeah, 18 or 19. I started sort of dabbling a little bit with production.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really take it seriously until I was in my early 20s. And it just kind of went from there, really. Yeah, I mean, I describe myself as a DJ first.
Yeah.
I'm a DJ first, and then obviously the producing side has obviously come from that. That's where some people are more producers and then DJs, but I'm a DJ first.
Yeah.
But they both both coincide with one another, and unless you do one, you don't do the other. So it's kind of, it's...
So you started out making music in your early 20s, and then, because that's before Colony then. So how did you start out? Because this is one of the questions that a lot of people have, like, how do you start out? What makes you decide to go with certain programs or whatsoever? And how do you make sure that you learn enough to get to a certain point that you can release music?
Lots of YouTube tutorials and videos. I suppose what made me get Logic and start working on Logic was I had an Apple computer.
Mm-hmm.
So it just went with that. I mean, originally I used to make house music, like new disco. And I actually released some stuff on Armada Deep like years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I released quite a few tracks on Armada.
Under a different alias?
What was
the alias?
Long and Harris.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I mean, it sounds like a painting and decorating company. Yeah. But yeah, so I released some tracks under that name. And those tracks were, I suppose, a kind of hybrid between new disco and deep house. And then it kind of went from there, really. And then, decided to rebrand and then obviously start Colony. And Colony kind of, I suppose, the Colony sound has came, it's a combination really of all of the different music I listen to and like, which kind of come from there really.
Yeah. And because you didn't start Colony until 2016, 17, something like that, together with Shane, of course.
Yeah, it was about 5 years ago we started Colony. Me and Shane have been mates for a long time. We went to college together.
Okay.
And we used to DJ together at different parties and we used to do events in London. And we decided to start Colony and we just kind of went from there really. And it was, the sound was, I don't know really how to put it. The sound was kind of built around trance, progressive, but we tried to kind of carve our own sort of sound within a niche market, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's kind of really how it started. And we just started working on different music, different ideas. And then, I mean, it took a while to get the sound kind of how we wanted it, how we visioned it. Some of the tracks sounded quite housey to begin with. Like, we was making tracks at like 126, 128 BPM. And they were kind of like, they weren't progressive. They were kind of, I don't really know what they were. It was like,
But that's a good thing. If you can't put it in a box, that means that you're doing something unique.
Yeah, I mean, because we used to make new disco music before, we was making like progressive with like new disco drums. So it was quite strange. It was like 126 BPM, 128 BPM, 80 sounding snares, disco sort of drums with like sort of progressive sort of arps. It just didn't really, it didn't really work at all really. We were just kind of experimenting.
Yeah. Well, I think how I define your sound is exactly what you just said. You have all kinds of different influences. Like the snare drum is always like,
yeah,
the reverb snare.
Yeah.
The 80s snare. I love that.
Yeah. I think with the Colony sound, the way I kind of describe it or break it down is there's three main elements to a Colony track. And there's the vocal chops.
Yeah.
You might have noticed in all my tracks, I always try to put some kind of vocal chop in there, whether it be just a word or two, and that kind of counters the melody. Big rolling bass lines, and then simple but catchy melodies. And that's
lots of them stacked up on the top of each other.
Lots of layers.
Yeah.
Lots of layers. I mean, at one point I was making tracks with big sort of chord progressions in the breakdowns, but I've slowly started coming away from that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now going more, I don't know really how to put it. I'm taking the sound more progressive sounding, but with more melodic elements to it, but I'm still keeping the vocal chops, the big bass lines. I'm coming away from the 80 snares a little bit.
Why? It's good, man.
Yeah, I just think I love the 80 snares, but sometimes it slows the track down a little.
Yeah, because it takes a lot of space in the mix.
Space up in the mix. You even need one or the other. You need a big kick, big massive kick,
and a short snare,
short snappy snare, or you need that big snare and a punchy kick.
Yeah,
one or the other. You can't have both because it just doesn't. You know yourself, it doesn't.
Yeah,
work.
No, it doesn't work. So you started out Colony. First of all, where did you get the name Colony from? Because when we put Colony in Google, then we get colonies like land that we used to claim when we were
yeah
like not so good people. The Dutch people were not so good in those ages. So how did you come up with that name?
Yeah, so the name Colony, it's actually, I think it's a city in Germany as well.
Yeah, well, it's a K in the Netherlands, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So originally we spelled Colony with a C.
Mm-hmm.
But when you write Colony down on a bit of paper and it's spelled with a C, it just doesn't look as good, the word. So then we decided to change the C and put a K.
But how did you come up with the word in the first?
Yeah, I suppose we was kind of bouncing around with a few different marketing ideas. We were thinking, right, I suppose going back to your point then, you know, colony, colonizing.
Yeah.
And it kind of sort of stemmed from that, really. You know, what does colony mean? It's kind of taking land and, I don't know, really. It just kind of worked. The word kind of worked. But having spelt it in German, it looked better on a flyer with a K.
Well, you have to think about these things, to be honest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, so I spelt it German. And it's actually quite funny as well. I honestly think when I started releasing tracks, obviously me, in the early days, I picked up a lot of support from a lot of German DJs. And I honestly think a lot of the German DJs thought I was German.
Yeah.
Because I spelt it German. It was spelled with a K.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Cosmic Gate, Marcus Schultz, they was really supportive. And I honestly think it has something to do with the word because it was spelled in German.
It's very possible, to be honest.
And I honestly think, it, they thought maybe I was German. You know, he's a German.
Like, we need to help out this German dude. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, he's one of us. And I honestly think there is an element of that, you know. It's actually funny because I was talking to Cosmic Gate and they actually thought I was German at first.
So they started talking in German to you?
Yeah, yeah.
He said, hey, I'm Colony.
Yeah, yeah. And it was
guten Tag, ja, alles klar, ja.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. And I kind of like... And they was like, you're the English colony, obviously. And I was like, yeah, yeah. But at first they thought I was German. And I honestly think a lot of people did because I spelt it German.
Yeah.
And then I had, there was a bit of a period of time where people were sort of mispronouncing the word. Some people was calling it Colony.
Colony. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it kind of, yeah, it's kind of stuck. And it's quite simple, but, you know, punchy word, I suppose.
Yeah. And you started out the project together with Shane Long. And now you separate ways. Why did you stop working together?
Yeah, yeah. So me and Shane, as I say, we initially started working together when we was about 18 or 19, putting parties on in London,
mm-hmm.
Doing events. And then we started making new disco music. And then we started the Colony thing. Shane's always gravitated more towards house music.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, he likes Defected. That's kind of his sort of, that's where he's kind
still
of,
makes music as well?
Yeah, yeah. He's making some stuff. he's releasing some music, some house music.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always naturally gravitated towards the house spectrum, as where my background comes from, sort of trance, progressive house kind of stuff. And so we was working together, we was making tracks. And then when obviously COVID happened, Shane decided to just go his own way and just, you know, do house stuff. And
mm-hmm.
That was it. And obviously I'm taking it forward and it's, yeah.
So it's just fine. Everything's fine. No juicy breakup stories.
No, nothing.
Oh, that's also nice to hear one time because a lot of duos, they just clash together and just crash and burn basically. But you just went your own separate way. That's great to hear, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you're in a duo, you know, you're going to argue.
Of course, it's a marriage.
It's, I mean, there are times when you just don't get on, especially when you're in a studio trying to...
How do you solve that?
Good question.
Thank you.
You just argue.
You just argue.
Probably shout at each other.
Yeah, did you do that?
Yeah. I mean, we was mates. You know, we was always mates. So we used to get on well. But there was, there was periods of time where, you know, we'd be in a studio, we'd be like, oh, this is just not working. And, we'd clash and, yeah, as you say, it's kind of a marriage.
But how do you find that perfect balance in between the sounds that you feel like, okay, this is what Colony needs to be?
Yeah.
When you're a doer, that's really hard.
Yeah, definitely. To be fair, we used to clash when it comes to making music sometimes, but we always used to end in a place where we kind of wanted the track to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we worked well together. As I say, we was good mates, you know, outside of the music. We went to college together. But it was just, yeah, as I say, it was more to the extent of Shane naturally produces house music. He prefers house music, and obviously COVID happened.
Yeah,
and he gave everyone just a period of time to sort of reevaluate what.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
And I think that was a big part of it. You know,
so I guess because I'm pretty sure there's people listening right now that are part of a duo. Just think about there's so many of them. like Cosmic Gate, Keon Albert, Swedish House Mafia. Well, that's not a duo, but what do you think is the secret, looking back at that period, what is the secret of a perfect marriage as two artists?
I think initially you need to be friends.
Yeah.
You need to be mates, put simply. And then it kind of just goes from there, you know? But yeah, I think if you're not friends to begin with, it's just going to be a bumpy road. That is a big part of it, I think, you know? And obviously musically, you need to be on the same page.
Yeah, but were you never afraid? Because like mentioned, there's also stories of breakups that people were friends their whole life and they clashed making music together and they destroy a friendship. Is that not something that you were afraid of stepping into being a duo, or you just saw everything through pink glasses, as we say here in the Netherlands, that everything was just fine?
Yeah.
No worries, nothing.
Yeah, I mean, we used to put events on, and we used to obviously work together running different events in London, different parties.
Mm-hmm.
So you've
been together on in thick and thin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, it kind of just worked, really.
Yeah.
Know? As I say, there was times where we used to clash, you know, when we was making music, but that's expected.
Arguments are also good sometimes, I guess. Okay, let's move on from that, because funny thing is, when I was preparing for the radio show and also for this interview, I looked at your Discogs page and I saw the first release actually under the Colony name is on Statement Recordings, my label, with the EP of Falling Skies and Crystal Tears. Do you still have a vivid memory of signing that track to Statement?
Yeah. Yeah, that was... That must have been sort of maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually came from, do you remember Marwin? He used to work at Armada.
Yeah.
Well, I knew Marwin because I used to release some like new disco deep stuff on Armada Deep.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was speaking to Marwin and I was like, I've got this track. I'm starting a new project. I think it might be something, you know, Armada, one of the labels, etc. And he was like, yeah, I'll put you in touch with Ruben.
Yeah.
And then that was it, kind of. He kind of introduced me to you. I sent you the track. You liked it. You signed it. And then... And it kind of went from there. But that was 5 years ago, man.
Yeah. Big shout out to Marwin, by the way. He's an A&R of his own company right now, has massive hits in the UK with writing them together with his wife. Unbelievable. So he's a really, really good A&R. And thank you for putting us together and like linking us. Because I remember getting these tracks, and what was for me was the unique sound. And I think it was also in the period that I was doing some earlier shows, some warm-up shows, and I think some Ibiza shows as well. And when I got these in, I was like, hey, this fits perfectly for those shows. So I remember playing these as well. So thank you for the trust back then.
No.
It's the only release ever on Statement. After that, you went to Vendit, for example, Black Hole, Avanti, Cold Harbor as well recently.
Yeah, and I've signed a few tracks to Cosmic Gate's label as well.
Oh, Wake Your Mind. Yeah, you have two releases there as well.
A few tracks on Zero Free. Mm-hmm. Before Zero Free.
Shout out to Jamie.
Yeah. Jamie, if you're listening, mate. I mean, to be fair, Jamie, one of the best A&R guys I've ever worked with, by far. You know, you send him a track and, I mean, he's on it, you know, lots of changes, but, you know, he wants the best out of the music and that's what it's about. And, I mean, I signed a few tracks to Zero Free initially because you go back a few years ago, the label was more sort of, I suppose big room is the wrong word, but more main room progressive.
Yeah.
It's, you know, since then it's gone more melodic.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just kind of, you know, navigated between 3 or 4 labels, and I just try to be consistent with my releases. I try to release it every 4 to 6 weeks on those labels we just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Is that because you said some interesting stuff there, to be honest, because one of them was consistency. I think also talking again to people that are in the beginning of their career, for example, I think that's one of the most important things to have the consistency to continually have new music for people to play, to listen to. And that's also the business side of thing. Do you focus a lot on, because you also mentioned Colony was also a business kind of name. You say now consistency, that is very important. You release on different labels. So you have a big business mind behind what you're doing. It's not just grabbing it out of the air. How do you approach that?
Yeah, definitely. I think, firstly, when it comes to releasing music, you need to release music on labels which kind of fit your sound.
Yeah, so that will help. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it. So I think when I tend to send the track to a label, you know, I always ask myself, does it fit this label? Does it fit their sound? Is it kind of current to what they're doing? And I kind of go from there. And obviously from that, you know, you build relationships with different people from different labels.
Yeah.
And then I find certain labels, tracks get more support than others. And that's obviously a big part of it as well. You know, you want the right DJs playing your music. But yeah, consistency, going back to the point of consistency, that is key, I think. And, obviously COVID, we had 2 years of COVID and I didn't release as much music.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're kind of out of that and we're moving forward. I'm sort of planning to release music every 4 to 6 weeks. And just kind of go from there, really.
You're not afraid to overkill your own releases?
I just think nowadays, people's, you know, attention spans are so
that's
short.
True, yeah.
You know, music gets lost. You know, if you go onto Beatport every week, there's so much new music.
Yeah.
And unless you're releasing consistently and regularly as well, people forget, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I try to sort of work to the sort of 6 week, schedule.
Yeah, this has changed so much in the last 12 to 15 years, I think, because I remember starting out in the music industry, we would press a vinyl promo, like a locker or whatever. You would promote it for 3 to 4 months and then release it. And it would be in the charts for maybe 10 to 12 weeks or something like that. So your release has a span of 20 weeks, something like that. And now you release it and a week later, it's already, Spotify has just taken that away. I think it throws a track in a playlist. The week later, it might be gone again.
100%. And I think there's an element of obviously technology, in relation to that. You know, if you go back sort of 15, 20 years ago, to make music, you need the access to hardware, before computers. So going back to your point of how record labels would have operated, you know, there's an investment to make the track.
Yeah.
So you need to.
You have to be dedicated 100% also to sign a track.
100%. But, you know, nowadays you don't need that hardware. You don't need that big studio, them expensive monitors.
No, we can literally put in a kick drum in here right now, loop it for 1 minute and release it on Spotify. It's there tomorrow.
Exactly. Things.
Is that a good or a bad thing, you think?
I don't know, really. I think when I first started listening to dance music when I was a teenager,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the big tracks, you know, some of the tracks from Armin and, you know, Tiesto and Paul Van Dyk. I mean, these are classics, you know, we still listen to them now.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I don't remember the last time I heard a track, you know, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. It's blown me away.
Yeah.
And I could honestly say, I'll be playing that track in 5 years' time.
Yeah,
I think times have changed. And
I think that's also, sorry to jump into this and hijack this, because also that's another thing that changed so much in the years. I'm going to sound old, because when you would do a DJ set in 15 years ago, you would play a lot of stuff from other people. Right now, as an artist or DJ, you're being booked based on your productions. So you would play at least 90 to even more percent of the tracks are your own tracks. So I guess we kind of blocked each other out of supporting music in each other's gigs also, right? So we kind of did this to ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Going back to the point we were speaking about earlier, and nowadays you can't just be a DJ. They both, DJ producer, they both coincide with one another. And I suppose if you're making your own music, you know, naturally you want to play it.
Yeah.
So then you end up in a situation where you're a DJ and then, you know, you might be playing 80% of your own tracks.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing a DJ set for an hour, 2 hours, you can pretty much play your own stuff, you know? I think times have changed. The market has changed massively. People's attention spans.
The TikTok.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
8 seconds, you have 8 seconds to impress someone with new music.
Yeah.
8 seconds, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And it is
what it is. Well, to be honest, I think it's also interesting times, because it also, right now we have the ways and means for State of Trance, for example, to show 2 hours of new music, which is not our own every single week. So there's good sides on that as well, because in the past, State of Trance was also played from vinyls and also like a limited amount of releases. So for us, I guess it's also okay. I have to jump into the questions of the viewers already, because we were kind of running out of time already. Ben McConnell wants to know, any collabs in the pipeline? And if you could collaborate with anyone, who would it be? So two questions.
That's a good question.
So do you have some already? Well, you did one with Paul Van Dyk. That's unbelievable. Legend.
I mean, it was a bit of a surreal experience, really.
Yeah. How did that come about? Sorry.
I'll
get back to your question, Ben. Don't worry. How did that come about?
So I signed a track to Vendit. And obviously, prior to signing the track to Vendit, Paul was very supportive of my music. There was a track I did with Julie Thompson called Light Me Up. Mm-hmm. And he played it. He was playing it in his radio show pretty much every week, you know, for about 6 or 7 weeks. And he was really, you know, really pushing the track, really behind it. And it kind of just went from there, really. So I signed a track on Vendit. Got speaking to his manager, and it just sort of came off the idea of that. And then, you know, I started a track. I sent it over to Paul, and then he just, you know, he basically made it 10 times better. Yeah. And that's kind of how it happened, really.
How did you react when you got in the first draft from his side?
Yeah, I was kind of blown away. I was like, wow, this is good, you know. As I say, it was surreal, really. You know, working with Paul van Dyk, I was like, goes back to.
Did he think you were German, by the way?
Oh, I didn't ask him.
Did he write an email? Guten Tag.
Maybe I'll ask him when I see him in a few weeks. It'll be interesting. But as I say, you know, going back to my point of, you know, what got me into trance music and electronic music in general, it was the likes of listening to Paul van Dyk, Armin, you know, Chicane, these people, and you know, to actually do a track with.
That's surreal.
Yeah, definitely, it is surreal. But you're going back to your point of collabs. I've not got anything lined up at present. To be honest with you, at the minute, I'm just focusing on originals. I'm just kind of focusing on originals at the minute, and you know, I'll just see what happens, really.
And if you could choose anyone to work with, who would it be?
Oh, that's a good question. Really good question. I'm trying to think. Within the trance scene or just in general?
In general. In general, anyone. Yeah. Sky's the limit.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I like the track of Armin because obviously he's a legend, you know.
Okay, let's take away Armin because everybody says Armin in the studio. So yeah, if it wasn't for Armin,
let's take Armin out. Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's a good question. I mean,
I'm pretty sure Ben will be chuffed that you said that. Good question.
Yeah, I like music from all different genres. I don't just listen to electronic music. You know, I listen to Fleetwood Mac. You know, Simply Red.
Yeah.
You know, Phil Collins. It's really across the board.
I think a perfect one for you would be, because when I listen to your music, I always hear this, especially because of the snare. It's always a bit Eric Pritz of 2018, something like that.
100%.
That snare.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, yeah. I think you just answered the question for me.
Yeah.
Eric Pritz. 100%, yeah. I'd love to try Eric Pritz. I mean, he's a legend, you know. His production is, it's as good as
unparalleled.
I mean, his mix stands are amazing, aren't they, you know.
Yeah, that's always, whenever you hear a track of Eric, also on a big sound system, you're like, okay, I quit.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's nothing we can do anymore.
Yeah, I tend to reference a lot of prior tracks, and yeah, I'm the same, you know. I can't get nowhere near it.
You'll get there. Yeah. No, you're fine. Interesting question. Joshua G. Smith wants to know, what's your go-to studio and or gig drink?
My go-to
gig drink. That's probably two different ones. So first studio.
I'm easy to please, really. Just a beer.
Just a beer. Just what kind of beer?
Dutch beer.
Heineken?
Amstel, Heineken. Yeah, I like the Dutch beers.
Ah, me too.
Or, you know, in the studio maybe. Yeah, probably a beer. I'm pretty simple, really.
Yeah?
Beers.
Beers? In the studio?
Yeah, just give me a beer.
So you get in the mood into creating stuff? I guess not 7 in the morning, of course, but.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't really drink that much. COVID kind of changed things quite a lot for me, really.
For a lot of people, I think. Because you get out of, on one side, people became alcoholic. On the other side, you just stopped with everything.
Yeah.
You should left saying that.
I mean, prior to COVID, I was out most weekends. I was drinking, you know, watching the football and, you know, just generally out and about. But since COVID, I don't drink nowhere near as much as I used to. I might go 3-4 months without drinking.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice sometimes. Elena69 Luca wants to know, what's your hobby besides making music?
Boxing. Yeah. I used to, as a kid, I used to box, and I used amateur boxing. I had about 30 fights as an amateur, and I still train just to keep fit.
Yeah.
I don't do the fighting side of it anymore. I'm not that dedicated. I just don't have the time for it. But I like to just do some training just to keep fit.
It's a getaway also too.
Yeah. You know, I've never been the sort of person who goes to the gym, you know, and lifts loads of weights. I do the basics. I'm just more of a, I prefer doing some cardio and a bit of boxing and maybe a bit of reading. Yeah, that's kind of it, really.
I guess that's funny. That's you're only the second one ever that I heard in the trance scene that's doing boxing, or I think Greg Downey is. Yes. So Thai boxing, I think.
I was about to say, yeah, Greg does a bit of Thai boxing.
And I see Umut Ozkan also doing Thai boxing, I think.
Yeah, it's just, as I say, I started boxing when I was about 9, and I sort of, I boxed until I was about 17. And I just do it now just for the fitness benefits.
That's a good one, to be honest. LeMain, question through Twitter. If you could have ever played at an Estate of Trance show in the past, which one would it be? Did you ever go to one of the Estate of Trance events in the past?
Yeah, I played at the Utrecht.
Yeah, but one. As a visitor?
No. I've only been to the one, and that was the one I DJed at in Utrecht. Probably about three years ago?
Yeah, it's Progressive Stage when we did it for the first time. Yeah.
Great show. I suppose one of the Mexico one looked pretty good. I see some good videos, and mm-hmm. It looked pretty good. Obviously, you played yourself. So
Yeah, I played the last Mexico one was, I played at the second stage, not the main stage.
Yeah.
And the main stage was, I'm a Formula One fan. So the main stage, you could see the track going over the stage. It's unbelievable. It was in the corner of where they were racing. It's unbelievable. So I was kind of jealous that I didn't play the main stage, but still it was nice to play the second stage over there. Let's see, we have time for one more, I think. What gig did change your DJ career? Question from Rudy Youssef.
What gig changed my DJ career? It's that Trance one, to be honest. It was a great show. It was good to come to Holland, Netherlands, and play to, I was about to say Dutch crowd, but it's not. It's a crowd from everywhere, Such a.
I think 60% at least is not from the Netherlands for a State of Trance. A lot of people from the UK, of course.
It's
everywhere.
It's a great show, and I was the resident DJ at the gallery at Ministry of Sound for a while, which was great as well. I was playing there pretty much. I was in there every month. Ministry is a good, it's a good venue. It's local to me as well. Mm-hmm. I've been there as a clubber. But yeah, I suppose the one gig that sort of stands out for me was, State Trance.
That's amazing to hear. You're not just saying that because you're here in the studio.
No, not at all.
What is the best memory about that night?
That night I played a Colony set, on my own tracks. It was a good vibe, And what I love about the trance scene is, people are there for a good time. Everyone's just there just to party and have a good time. And
No one's there by accident.
No, definitely not. No, it's very different to the house scene and the techno scene, which can be quite snobby, let's be honest.
Yeah, it is.
The trance scene is not like that at all. It's could be any more different. People are there just generally for the music. And
I remember the vibe of that stage that night was electric. It was a little bit darker than the other stages, which was perfect because I think that's always better for the progressive kind of sound. It needs to be a little bit dark, a little bit dirty. And the vibe was electric, buzzing.
It was good. Yeah, I liked it a lot. It was a good show. I'm looking forward to coming back to Holland in June to play Luminosity. I've heard great things. I've never been to the festival myself, but I know people have, and they said it's a really good.
It's also very international.
Yeah.
Like, I think I would say Luminosity is definitely one of the highlights for everybody in their summers. Like, several stages, open-minded people. Yeah, you're going to have a good time. What other shows do you have lined up in the next couple of weeks, months?
Yes, yeah,
also a question from Joshua.
Yeah, so on the 1st of April, I'm playing at the Ministry of Sound with Paul Van Dyke's headlining, so I'm on that show. And then in June, I'm back to the Netherlands for Luminosity. July, I'm going to Poland to play in Poznan at a festival. And in August, I'm playing in Ibiza, Shine at Eden. And I've got a boat party as well, I think, which is in July in London. So I've got a few things happening, just trying to stay busy and, work on lots of new music so I can play at these shows. And
you need those. It's so nice to have shows again. So you get inspired to and also put dots at your horizon that you're like, okay, I had that last week for State of Trance in Poland that you were like, okay, I'm going to play this set, so I need to make sure that tune is done, right? So you have some dots at the horizon to work for.
100%. I couldn't agree more with that, to be honest with you. I think when you're making music, you need to be DJing.
Yeah.
It's inspiring and
The trigger.
Yeah, 100%, And this kind of goes back to my point earlier, especially for myself. I was a DJ first before I was a producer. So, You need to be DJing. You really do. I think if you're in the studio and you're not DJing, it's just, you can get uninspired and it happens.
I would compare it to being a football player, practicing, not playing matches.
100%.
You need those matches.
100%.
All right. Thank you so much for answering these questions and thank you for your time. Thank you also once again for your guest mix on the State of Trance. You can listen it back also on YouTube right now. And I hope to see you again very soon.
Ruben, thanks again for having me. Really appreciate your support. And yeah, it's great to see you.
See you next time for a new podcast. See ya. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in. To check full episodes of A State of Trance for free, simply visit ArminRadio.com. A State of Trance returns next week.